Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum and, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. For this week's episode, we welcomed Oregon Track Club's Jake Hayward. Hayward ran a superb 3:52 mile and Welsh record at the Gateshead Diamond League on Tuesday night and looks to be in cracking shape ahead of the Olympics in Tokyo. He set PBs of 146 in the 800 and 333 in the 1500 this year, and he's definitely one to look out for when he pulls on the GB Olympic vest in a couple weeks' time.
I mean, you saw him on Tuesday. Absolute beast in the mile, and now his next race is going to be the Tokyo Olympics. Look out for him there. What did we speak about? Well, I mean, one of the big topics we obviously spoke about was that transition to the Oregon Track Club. Being a guy from Cardiff, we spoke about how that actually came about as well. It's unusual that someone who's never been to, you know, an American college or anything like that with the links, signs for Oregon Track Club. So we talk about that transition he had at such a young age as well. We also talk about the expectation on his shoulders, being very good at a young age. He did have, and especially coming from almost like a humble background in Wales, where he was by far and away the best. You know, Jake admits he had a lot of expectation and a lot of pressure going into races, which, you know, obviously he's coped with very well moving forward. So that was an interesting take on things. He also talks about the wonderful Mark Rowlands, you know, how, I mean, the guy's a storied coach now, very successful coach in Oregon. If you haven't heard of him, just go research him, some of the athletes he's coached as well. And, I mean, look at the success he's done with Jake Hayden. What will amaze you in this podcast is Jake Hayward's probably natural talent, but his ability to work very, very hard and pay attention to the smallest of details, and them two things combined, you know, probably make him into the athlete he is today. So yeah, I don't want to spoil the podcast for you, but listen out for, you know, his preparations through to this point. The last year, 18 months, 2 years, for some it's been brilliant. For Jake, it's actually been an absolute roller coaster. So when you hear that, you'll probably be shell-shocked how he's heading to Tokyo and having such a fabulous season as well. But enjoy. I hope this gives you a great insight into the boy. Well, he's a little bit older than a boy now, but still only just 22 years of age. He is a rising star and one for the future here in British athletics. PBs of, well, Lum's told you. I don't need to tell you again. But yes, enjoy the podcast. Get out for a good run. We're due a heat wave, so don't overheat on Sunday, tomorrow. But I hope all your track seasons are going well. Thanks for listening, as always. And the big one's coming. The Olympics is coming. We're going to be releasing some distance-only timetables for you guys as well. And maybe you just need to start adjusting your time zones. You know, I hope you're booking holiday so you can stay up late and watch the Olympics live, like me and Lumsky. But yeah, take care. I've rambled enough. Enjoy the podcast. Catch you next week.
Jake, welcome to the podcast. First of all, just congrats on your Olympic selection, the trials. Let's talk about the trials first. Did you have like a big aim going in? Like, was that always the target? And kind of did the race pan out as you thought it would?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, no, my goal was always to make the team. That was my goal for a while, like the last few years, actually. And yeah, that never changed when I went to the trials.
Yeah, for sure. The race like itself, did you expect anyone to go earlier? Because it was kind of a pretty tight for a lot of it. And then it sort of like kicked off big time. Did you guys, like, I guess you and your coach, did you have an idea of what you thought might happen? Or did you just stick to your own sort of plan?
Yeah, I obviously discussed it with Mark. And I kind of had a plan of what would be the ideal scenario. But also you got to have like a few plans just in case, because you don't know what other people are going to do. It's almost like a guessing game. And I think obviously off like previous races, everybody kind of thought Josh was going to go from further out. So that obviously influenced my plan. But yeah, no, I think you just got to be versatile in the moment. And you got like, you know, my coach can't run the race for me. I've got to be the person who makes the decisions in the moment based on how I'm feeling. And obviously what the field's looking like, who's at the front, you know, who's a threat. Like if someone makes a move, say for example, Jake, then you know it's probably going to be a threat. Whereas if other people make a move, you have to make a decision whether that's a move that's going to affect the race or not.
And you were, I think I'm right in saying this, you were pretty much the first to not necessarily make a move, but you hit the front and started to wind it up from about 400, didn't you?
I thought like for me personally, I wanted to be in a position near the front. So when it kicked off, I could either just touch on the back or I was happy to control the pace myself.
Yeah, for sure. What do you actually do like in training to like prep for these sorts of races? Because I guess like a lot of people probably like lower down athletics, like everything's based around times and running quicker. But like, what do the actual sessions look like or things like, or do they look any different just in terms of prepping for a championship race? Like whether it's the heats and then the final or just necessarily the change of pace and things like that?
Yeah, I think like if you kind of take a step back, it's like, you know, what do you need to do to get in that kind of shape? So, you know, you've got to build the foundation. So the most important thing in the first place is obviously, you know, building the aerobic side or whatever. And then those kind of like speed changes and those kind of sessions, they're literally just the icing on the cake. Like if you can do that and you have time to do that, it's fantastic. But it's not the be all and end all. Like if you know, you've got to be able to do the background work in the first place to be able to do that stuff. If that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously like the 1500 has a bit of a mix of both of that really. Like you say, it's got that kind of huge aerobic work and also the speed. Like what's like the reason you kind of went to the 1500 in the first place? What do you like about it?
I think because I used to do the 800 when I was younger, but I was always like pretty good at cross country. So I just thought, like it's kind of like a bit of both. It's a nice blend. And I always felt like I had a pretty good kick. But in the 800, everybody has a good kick. So I think there's just natural progression to the 1500 suited me.
Yeah, you have a really good kick, man. I just want to talk about a little bit before the trials. You did that race out in America, in Portland. And I think when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow. You know, you really have sort of stepped up. It's before the season, guys like yourself and Piers Copeland and like Josh Lage, George Mills, you're kind of like on the edge. And it was like one of you is going to do it. But when you ran that time, I was like, okay, it's looking like you could be the guy to secure that third spot. So from that point into the trials, did you put that pressure on yourself to secure that third spot?
Yeah, I believe that I should have that the third spot. I mean, my goal was to win the trials, to be honest with you. But I definitely felt that I should be in a team. I think after I ran that race in Portland, I remember standing on the start line and the reality was that I needed to get the time. If you don't get the time, you ain't going to go to the Olympics. And I remember looking across the start line and I spoke to my coach before the race and I just couldn't rely on anybody else to, you know, take the pace on. And I fully accepted that, look, it's not ideal, but it's something that I'm going to have to do. How bad do I want it? Do I want to get the time? So I just went straight behind the pacemaker. Just ran.
That's what was impressive to me over, like, I know Gricey picked you that day, but I think you took it on from 700 out, didn't you? And did real hard work. They say that penultimate 300 from 700 to the bell is the one that counts in a 15. And you did basically all the work for him that day.
Yeah, well, I ran in LA 2 weeks before and I ended up being at the front again because I kind of like pushed it on, but I kind of got caught up between just trying to race and win because that's like my natural instinct to do. And also then with the time, and I just held a bit too much back on that third lap. But when I went into Portland, I knew the objective was the time. So that's kind of why I pushed it on so much.
Yeah, for sure. We got a little fun fact. Obviously, yourself, Jake Whiteman and Josh Kurt all won Euro Juniors 1 year after the other. And obviously, now look at yourselves, like you're going into the Olympics together. Like you actually beat Jakob like a couple of times, I believe, as well. So like, what's that like? Kind of just to be kind of in with that crowd as juniors and then moving through, because obviously, like not everyone makes that progression, like I say progression, but clearly like in the 1500 in Britain, it's all been a good progression from the Euro Juniors going through. So how has that been for you, basically, that progression through the Junior GB ranks?
Yeah, I think there is a massive step up from juniors to seniors, especially so at the moment with the depth in the UK. I think it's harder than ever. I think the juniors is like great for like kind of like learning your trade. Like the European juniors and the European youths, those kind of races, especially world juniors, like really did give me a good opportunity to learn sort of like the tactics and actually compete against guys who are at good level. I mean, world juniors, some of those guys were running 3:31, like they were winning the Diamond League circuit. That's definitely helped me. And the fact that I was in the mix with them when I was a junior kind of gave me the confidence that I was always going to come through. My biggest problem was literally just staying healthy. I'm confident that I had the ability, but for me, it was mainly just trying to stay in one piece.
Yeah. On your age group, you came through a pretty nuts age group. Like you said, you had Jakob, you have like people like Solomon Borrega and stuff. Maybe that Teferra guy. You just had a heap. Basically, any decent Ethiopian now seemed like it was in that World Junior race, and I think it was all them guys were pretty much in the World Champ final that year as well, weren't they?
Yeah, no, for sure. And they were the guys that were the best in the world at that point, apart from Cherry, to be honest.
Yeah.
It wasn't an easy race. No, not at all.
Well, that was 2018 when Ingebrigtsen. Was it 2018?
Yeah.
Grayson went on to like do the double at the Euros. So that kind of set the bar for you because you were competing at these championships. You knew that that's the level you wanted to get to. And in a way, like not many people really experience that because, a lot of people are either happy to just make world juniors or sometimes it falls on like uneven years or odd years or whatever. And they just go to a Euro juniors and the level is completely different. And you actually went to that World Juniors and competed and came fourth, was it?
Yeah, fourth, yeah.
Yeah. So, that year, how did you prepare for that? Being British and you wouldn't have been open to that competition much at all throughout the year.
Yeah, so at that point, I was still with James Thee. So I just transitioned to university. I think that was my first year at uni. So obviously that was a big change in itself, but I made the decision that I wanted to stay at home because I didn't want to get caught up with the kind of like the uni lifestyle. And I just felt like that would work best for me. So I went to Cardiff University, just drove in to my lectures and stuff. That was about taking me like 15 minutes. And then I kind of was basically training like a professional outside of that, I guess. So the World Juniors itself, like the qualifying time, I don't know, it's like 3:43, but I was quite comfortably under that. And I think at a junior age, there's a massive difference. Like there's in the seniors, there's the depth that's there. So even getting out of the rounds and the semifinals, et cetera, is really difficult. Whereas in the juniors, you kind of have the top guys. And then below that, there's a massive gap. So from that side of things, I think going through the rounds and stuff, it was good, but it wasn't as challenging, as a senior. So I think the World Junior final itself was obviously very, very challenging. Because I didn't win the race, but I think it's definitely stood me in good stead for the seniors now.
And I just want to talk about moving on from there, and I remember you ran 3:39 and you came fourth in that World Junior race. And how did you cope with the pressure after that? Or did you not really experience any pressure? But from our side, there was definitely, we're obviously, Cardiff based, there was definitely a lot of hype, about yourself being the next big thing. So did you experience that? How did you cope with that sort of pressure?
Yeah, I think being from Wales, not many people go to the championships in itself. And then obviously to win a medal at European Juniors or whatever, for a Welsh athlete is seen as like a fantastic achievement. And I remember kind of like the BBC guy actually coming out to European Juniors before the race. And at that point, I hadn't won the medal and he's like filming me in the, like the camp and everything. And yeah, like there is pressure with it, but I think for me personally, I really thrive off that pressure. The only pressure that I feel is what I put on myself, my own expectations of myself. I don't really listen to what other people think I can and can't do. That's kind of irrelevant. It's literally just on what I believe I can do. And as long as I step on the track and come off the track knowing I've given 100%, then I'm happy.
I think you've got five on pressure, haven't you, when you reach like the level you're at, to be honest.
Yeah. With that, I just want to like you mentioned before, just about probably one of the only things like holding you back like through those years was just injuries and things like that. Let's just talk about kind of your almost, we mentioned before, that you almost going into this year, you weren't like, if you don't mind me saying, you weren't like the big name going into the year to like make the team or things like that. It wasn't like you get with Whiteman or Kurt, things like that. But what do you think actually helped this year, like in terms of the winter work and obviously doing stuff at OTC, being almost quite quiet about it? Like, we didn't hear a lot about what you're doing with racing and things like that. So like when you came out and run those times, what was it, do you think, that actually made the difference in terms of your preparation this season?
I think, yeah, for, you know, for starters, I don't think anybody, if you would have been in September, would have put my name on that list, except myself, to be honest. And I think it was a difficult period last year with my Achilles. I still had an Achilles injury when I was with James. I went out to Mark and I still had a bad Achilles injury. I mean, I could barely walk when I joined Mark. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I'd moved to the other side of the world, and it takes time for somebody to, you know, to develop that relationship with Mark, for him to understand me, for me to understand him and what I needed. It takes time to develop. And last year, obviously, with the Olympics getting postponed, that kind of obviously changed the dynamic of what we were trying to do. So my races last year weren't really kind of like anything to go off. And then August, it got to a point where I was just like, something's not right. I need to go see a doctor. We need to figure this out and get it sorted. So I went to the doctor and, you know, had the scan or whatever. I don't want to go into too much detail, but he was basically like, I have no clue how you're, you know, competing right now. You have like two massive tears in both Achilles. So I had to go in a boot. I actually was in a boot from September until pretty much Christmas time. I think I did my first sort of like reintroduction phase around Christmas. And I had about 3 weeks worth of running in January, literally just jogging like on the, it's called a light speed. It's kind of like similar to an Alter G.
Right.
And just basically working hard with the physio in terms of like rehabbing all the exercises that I needed to do, because there was a lot of stuff that I needed to fix anyway with my biomechanics and other things that I needed to work on. And I think actually having that foundation has set me up nicely for summer. So yeah, obviously January, I had a pretty decent block. By the end of January, I was starting to train with the girls. Just doing like, you know, mile reps, like 540, 520, that sort of effort. And then I was just around February time, something flared up again. So I had to go back. So I was in a boot again then in February. And then when I came out of that one, that's when things started to like go on up again. And since then, I haven't really looked back. I've just built it up progressively. So I'd say I only really started training properly since March.
Wow. There's a couple of things I want to touch on in that year as well. Did you, with Achilles, you know, did you, I don't know if it was one of these ones where they offer you surgery and say like, it might be better with surgery, but I was kind of glad to hear that you just went in a boot, because it seems anyone who sort of has Achilles surgery struggles to sort of ever, you know, get back. So was that something you had to consider, or was it, you know?
Yeah, it was obviously something I had to consider. Mm-hmm. And I'd looked at stories of other people and kind of like, I did my research, because, you know, any time you go under surgery is a massive deal. Yeah. You know, the doctor might say like, oh yeah, it's just easy, we just go in and do this and that. But at the end of the day, like, you don't know what the outcome's going to be. Mm-hmm. So I was fully prepared to, you know, not run for 6 months and take more time than I needed to just make sure that I was 100% healthy again.
Wow. I mean, that's just a crazy story as well. The fact you sort of only started running in March and stuff, I was going to say, you would have had Euro indoors and stuff going on at the time. And, you know, you must have had some real inner self-belief to know that you could get fit in a short period of time. A lot of people would have almost written off the season, even though it was March, you know, when you started back.
Yeah, I think, like, don't get me wrong, I was still cross-training. It wasn't like I was just, not doing anything. But yeah, in terms of, you know, it's not easy to come back from what happened. That's a success in itself. But at the same time, you know, just making the team is not my goal. You know, I want to go to the Olympics and actually do the best I can.
For sure. With that, like, so when you have those kind of setbacks, obviously you're coach of Mark Rowland at Oregon Track Club. Like, how is it, how important is it being part of a group like that with kind of the access to like physios and facilities, I presume that, that you guys have? Like, how important has that been? Like, I guess a change from your setup in Cardiff before.
It was massive. I think Mark as a coach, the detail that he goes into is above and beyond anything I've ever seen. And a lot of the success that I've had, you know, the last couple of months, like, I owe to Mark, because, you know, he built me back up from a place where, like, not many coaches would be able to, in given the time period. And he just knows how much I need, without overdoing it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, coming away from a session, you know, getting the stimulus that you need, but without putting yourself at risk of, you know, further injury, etc. And yeah, the obviously the transition itself, having access to the physio and the S&C and all that sort of stuff, was a step up, and that really has helped me, like, develop as an athlete.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, perhaps if you were anywhere else in the world at that point, and you didn't go to OTC, you know, you would have struggled to, you know, especially reach the level you are at now, I would have thought, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think what was nice is the fact that I was living with other athletes who'd been through injuries themselves. So when I was actually in my boot over summer, most people went home, but Hassan Mead and Tom Farrell were still in the house. And Hassi, you know, speaking to Hassi, he's been through some stuff. You know, he had a collapsed lung and he came back from that. And the way he spoke about that was just like, you know, why can't you come back from it? And I think, you know, it kind of puts things into perspective sometimes. There's a lot of athletes that have injuries, serious injuries, and they come back from them because they're not fazed by them. They're prepared to be patient, prepared to do the work. And at the end of the day, they've got the talent to come back.
I mean, that's it. Being able to stay motivated that whole time when you're injured is, and treat it like you're still training, is key. Because a lot of people, the minute they get injured, they just get disheartened and, you know, sort of cross-training, start peters out. I mean,
yeah, do it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what happens to most of us. I mean, yeah. It happens to me. You know, you do a few run spins on the bike and you're like, you know, I kind of had enough. So to stay motivated in that time, and I guess it's credit to like the team and the environment you were in, because they kept you accountable as well, I take it.
Yeah, no, 100%. They definitely kept me honest. And that was part of one of the things when I had the injury. It was like, I just made sure I took 100% accountability for it. I didn't blame anybody for it. You know, it's my body. It's on me. Okay, it was unfortunate that it happened. It wasn't necessarily my fault. But yeah, I have to take accountability for it. And what can I do to prepare? You know, if I can't run, what can I do? Can I lift to go? Can I go in the pool and aqua jog, stare at a wall for an hour, whatever it is? Obviously, it's not ideal, but that's what's got to be done if you want to, you know, go on and achieve in the summer.
I think it makes you stronger as well, like mentally, you know, being able to do that. But mate, how did it all come about then? You know, OTC was a huge move, and I remember when, you know, the rumors were sort of spreading around the Cardiff and stuff. And so how did it come about in the first place, you know, to move out to OTC?
Yeah, so I was working with James at the time, and I'd just come off Eurocross country. So I did World Juniors with James and Eurocross, and they both went well. Like, I came fourth in them. Obviously, I was disappointed not to medal, but it was positive. And I think a lot of people were like, you know, why would you change coach when it's, you know, clearly working, I guess. But I think for me, like, I always felt like I was going to move on eventually. And when the opportunity came to work with Mark, you know, I wanted to take that. And it's not every day you get the opportunity to train with someone who's coached multiple Olympic medalists. And, you know, you're training with people like Nigel Amos, 141. And then you've got, you know, Hassi and Pat in the strength side of things. You don't get much better than that, really.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? What's your like relationship with Mark like as a coach? Because we've had JT and Tomo on the podcast before, and they talked about kind of how interpersonal he is, like with his athletes. And what's your kind of experience of that?
Yeah, Mark's a great guy. When I first moved out, I actually lived with him. I stayed in his house, so he welcomed me into his home.
Wow.
He hadn't really met me before, so that speaks a lot about him as a person. And I think as a coach, he likes to coach people. He likes to coach the individual. I think that's the biggest thing. Everybody's a different project, I guess. It's not like one way or the highway. He very much does like get to know the person, what makes them tick. And it takes time to obviously develop that. I think, he'll probably say like the first year, don't even, think about the first year. It's the second year that, the results start showing, because it obviously takes time to develop.
Let's just talk about kind of your daily routine now in the US with, you've mentioned some of the guys and girls that you train with already. But what does it kind of look like in terms of like, when do you have practice? And like, when do you like go to the gym and things like that? What does it look like kind of Monday to Sunday?
It's probably a, fairly similar to most people, to be honest. There's no like special secret, I guess. We do sessions either Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, or Tuesday, Friday, depending on time of year or what the sessions are. And then we'll be in the gym twice a week as well on top of that, and do some sort of like drills, like working on biomechanics, hurdle drills, that sort of thing as well, incorporating that.
You guys seem quite keen on biomechanics. Like, I've seen you when you were with these lot and a bit younger as well. And you were always someone who strikes me as having really good biomechanics, really good form. But when you went to Mark, was that something he wanted to improve even more? It's interesting because we spoke to Lindsay about, work on your strengths to make them even stronger. You don't work on your weaknesses so much so, but you were someone who had, your strength to me was your form and your biomechanics. And so it's interesting you carried on working on it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I'd never really been taught how to run. It sounds crazy, doesn't it? When you think it back, it's like, you've never been taught how to run when I was a kid. Even with James, I didn't really, I think James will admit, like, we didn't really work on that sort of stuff.
No.
And when I went to Mark, that's when I really, really started thinking a lot more in detail about how I move. Because especially when you're trying to run really fast, like if you're not economical, it's going to have an impact. And also just generally staying healthy, if you're not running in the right way, or if you're not strong enough, or imbalances, etc., you're just going to get injured.
It's interesting you said that, Matt, because I was thinking the same thing. But when I saw you doing that session the other week, you literally run like a machine now, but like in a good way. Like your form, like how kind of tall you are, and it's almost mechanical in a way, but like it does look like it's really like even come on like another level. And I guess I noticed that in the race, and then seeing you at the track the other week, and it's just like it's crazy.
Well, I think the best athletes always are. You look at that was something that the Kenyans and Ethiopians, and I think us as Westerners, we've caught onto a lot recently as well, is they are really in tune with their body, and they do work, okay, they may have a flailing arm or whatever, but they work a lot on their leg cycle, their foot plant and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think if you look at a lot of the top guys, a lot of the top runners, that's what separates them, is the way that they move and how effortless it is, when they hit the track and return from the ground. There's a lot to be said of that. I mean, who's the... One of the best models is, for me personally, is Wilson Kikita. I don't know if you know. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to be able to run like that. But, you've obviously got a... obviously everyone's body's slightly different and everyone has slight imbalances. But yeah.
Yeah, Kikita, man. Gosh. Yeah, you could watch that leg action all day. it's true, though, because I remember being like training with Whiteman for a little, well, not training him, but being, in Flagstaff at the same time as him, and the amount of time spent on drills and, that foot plant and that push through the ground, and then when you guys get on the track and, you're doing 1500 going through and, at 57 pace and stuff, you make 57s look very easy.
Yeah. I don't know if it feels as easy as it looks, but yeah.
But it's, you know, and to me, that's always how you determine like a really good athlete to like a good club runner, if you like, is, you know, even in that last lap, they don't look like they're tiring, really. You know, in the 800, maybe the last 50 people get really tired, but even on a 15, you know, their form is still bang on.
Yeah, like you don't see people getting medals like on the world stage and just like, yeah, if they're all over the place, like for the most part anyway. It just doesn't really happen, does it?
Mm.
Let's talk about some of the sessions you kind of did, because like kind of prepping for this, we chatted to you like a little bit, and you said to me just about how you guys have a bit of an emphasis on how the sessions feel, I guess, and it sounded similar to something what Andy Butcher said to us the other week. Like it was more about how the sessions feel in relation to the pace rather than actually the splits you're necessarily hitting each week.
No, for sure. I think. I guess if you like take a step back and just think, what is the purpose of the session? Mm. I think that's the key thing. What am I trying to get out here? You know, if it's a threshold run and you're running at, I don't know, 440 miling, why are you running at 440 miling? Is that actually your threshold? So I think there's a lot of people that they don't consider what the purpose of the session is and what they're trying to get out of it. And I think the way our sessions are structured is that it's an accumulation over time. You don't just get fit from one amazing session. You know, it's the accumulation of everything, the mileage, the gym, the sessions themselves, all kind of like leading towards that end goal where you want to peak in the summer. Mm. And I think for me, I know I'm fit, not necessarily from the stopwatch, but from the way I feel when I'm moving on the track. I think that's the biggest indication for me.
Yeah. And it's so important. And yeah, like which I was saying to us as well, like seems similar for him. Like, I think that's it. Like, we see so many people like smashing all these workouts and putting them up on Strava and things like that. And then it comes to race day, and that's probably, they run the same almost. They run the same as all they're running the sessions rather than actually, yeah, feeling good in a workout.
Well, it just seems to be a common theme as well. You know, you guys at the top, you know, going to Olympic Games and competing at that level, you get confidence from how you feel and how you're running, because you're in tune with your body. And I think people who are less in tune with their body, they can only get confidence from splits.
Yeah, I think a lot of people try go searching for it, and you know, oh, I've got to be able to do this workout to be able to run this, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't always work like that. Everybody's different. So yeah.
Strong. Yeah, interesting. Obviously, we want to chat to you about world champs next year. Is be close to home. What's the kind of OTC looking for? For next year, because obviously I guess that's massive. Like, do you train there pretty much every workout, or
so we're meant to train there, but yeah. Because of coronavirus and technically it's a university facility, we haven't been allowed to go on. So yeah, all these athletes from the UK have obviously flown over, done races there, and I haven't even been on.
Oh, you're not at all?
I've never been on Hayfield, which is crazy, isn't it? Because I literally live like 3 minutes up the hill from the stadium. I run past the stadium every single day and I've never been on it.
Hey, talk about that. Is that just inspiring in general to be in that hub of, because like for us and fans, like we see Oregon as basically the home of track and field across the world, really. Is that inspiring day in, day out? Like, do people, dare I say, do people know who you are when they see you run? If you've got your Oregon like gear on and stuff, will they?
Yeah, I guess if I have my Oregon kit on, but I don't think many people know who I am, to be honest with you.
not yet.
I'm not quite Nigel Lahasi, but yeah, I think, yeah, it's great. And the Oregon kids themselves, there's so many people out running. You go out on Priest Trail in the morning and there's so many people, and it is great to see, and the community really does get behind it for sure.
Yeah. So do you have any like aims for those champs next year, or is it kind of all eyes on this summer first?
Yeah, obviously the focus is, you know, the next few weeks. But yeah, obviously Eugene, being based in Eugene is massive. And it's an interesting year itself, obviously, with the World Champs, the Commonwealth Games and the Europeans. And it'll be interesting to see how athletes obviously prepare for those, if they choose all three, or, you know, have to prioritise, etc.
Yeah, Worlds is going to be, I don't want to talk about Worlds too much, but it's going to be interesting. It's actually quite early, isn't it? It's 15th of July. So I can imagine British Champs is going to be a bit earlier. So it's going to be a bit like this year, everyone sort of prepping and having to peak early. But
yeah,
mate, we haven't really touched on going to Tokyo, really, have we?
Yeah.
And all of that, you know, was obviously you got the bronze at British Champs. Let's talk about that 2 days. What was that 2 days like as an athlete when you were waiting to hear if you were selected or not? I mean, you must have been confident. But, you know, with British athletics and selection policies, like, you can never be 100% confident you're going to get picked. So when you finished third, you know, what was that 2 days like waiting to hear, you know, when that team was announced?
Yeah, I think, like, I'm never really nervous, to be honest. Like, even before races, you know, obviously you get the adrenaline, you get a little bit of nerve, but I'm always pretty confident. I'm really calm. But I think those 2 days was probably the most nervous I've ever been because it's out of my hands at the end of the day. Like, I put myself in the best position that I possibly could. I did the best I could on the day. You know, I had two standards and I felt like I performed on the day to earn that third spot. That's my opinion. And I'm glad that British Athletics or the governing body decided that they agreed as well. So yeah, obviously when I got the call, I was over the moon to get that call because it is a massive opportunity, you know, to say that you're an Olympian. It's incredible.
Easy. I mean, I think with these events where we're starting to see, you know, 4, 5, 6 people have the standards, I think they should just, you know, put it back to that 3 past the post because it's just who's performing on the day that shows they're in form, you know, that shows they can do it in a championship setting as well. And if you just go on like times and performance before the amount of different races, like we're going to see people compete in Monaco and, you know, compared to where you ran your race in Portland, like, yes, the weather was good and stuff, but it's no Monaco, you know? So if someone puts a second or two on you, I just feel it's about time that we do the 3 past the post. Would you agree with that as an athlete?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I think that's the fairest way. When you've got people with multiple standards, it's got to be first 3 past the post because at the end of the day, the Olympics is a championship and it's about turning up on the day and performing when it matters. And that's exactly what the British Champs is. If you can't go there and perform on the day, then do you really deserve the spot to go ahead of someone else who's beat you, you know?
Especially, you know, when people are pulling out with injuries and the games is only 3 or 4 weeks, 4 and a bit weeks after trials anyway. You know, if you've had to pull out because of an injury, I feel like chances are you're going to be touch and go whether you're going to be fit for the Olympics anyway. Properly over someone who can actually turn up on the day of the trials?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think that I understand why they have the discretionary spot.
Yeah.
And I think majority of the time it does genuinely benefit everybody, you know, benefits the system. I think there's a couple of occasions now where maybe it hasn't benefited and it's actually been a negative effect. But I think, yeah, the fairest way is just first 3 past the post when people have standards.
Anyway, you're on the team and what's your plans been like now, you know, heading into Tokyo? How long have you got? 3 weeks, is it, till you compete?
So I think the first race is the 3rd of August. I've got that wrong, that's embarrassing, but
no, I think you're right, actually.
So fly out on the 19th of July, I believe.
Wow. And you're racing next week as well?
Yeah, so I'm going to be racing Gateshead Mile. It's the last race I do.
Yeah, that's a stacked British field there, isn't it? I mean, it's basically an all-British field by, like, the old American. Mate, yeah, so just as, you know, on Tokyo, your heat's at 9 o'clock in the morning, 9:05 in the morning. Are you going to prepare? You know, how do you prepare for that? Because as athletes, I mean, you've never competed at that time, surely.
No, apart from maybe like mini marathon or something like that.
Yeah, or something crazy. Like, if you can call a parkrun a competition, yeah. But like, you would have never put yourself, you know, through, you know, the physical demands that you will at the Olympics. So are you preparing for that at all? Are you taking that into account?
Yeah, no, of course. I'm definitely factoring that in. The time of the race. And I think for me personally, one of the biggest things that I need to make sure I get right is the heat acclimatization.
Yeah.
Especially for the longer distances, like the 5K, 10K, you know, marathon is crucial. But even for the 1500, I think it's very important.
Yeah, man. When do you fly out to the holding camp?
So I go out 2 weeks before. So it's the 19th of July, I think.
Yeah, decent. Yeah, you mentioned to me the other day, you much prefer racing at the championships than like just racing for times and things like that. Obviously, this is the biggest championship of them all. So, like, what's kind of like just, I guess, your final thoughts going in, and like how like much are you looking forward to it, and like what's the aim really?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it's the biggest stage that you can compete on as an athlete in track and field. And yeah, the fact that it's a championships, that's what I'm about. That's what I enjoy. I feel like I always give my best performances at championships. I'm looking to soak up the experience of the games, because it's another level up, the Olympics, and it'll be interesting, obviously, to go through the process itself and actually just learn and absorb as much as I can while I'm there.
Yeah, bang on. And then we just got a bit of a fun question for people. We just want to know, like, you've been a Nike sponsor. That's like the holy grail in track and field. And, you know, you especially for the OTC, you know, you're getting spoiled with kit and shoes. But do you want to just let us know, like, your shoe rotation? Because that's a big thing for, like, listeners to know, like, especially these days when there just seems to be so much choice, doesn't there? You know, you've got an easy run shoe, you've got a steady run shoe. There's just unlimited choice for different things. So do you want to just let us know, like, what you wear day in, day out for different things? Give a little idea for the listeners.
Yeah, so I try and keep it simple. To be honest, I think for me personally, I like the Infinity Reacts for like my mileage.
Nice.
Which people might think, like, I think a lot of people don't run in them. Yeah. It looks more of like a fashion.
I run in them like twice a week, but like, yeah, not like loads.
Do you like them?
Yeah, yeah. I wear them for like, say I'm like shaking out in the morning before a session or a race. I'll wear them in the morning for like 3 to 5 miles, but I never do like, I wouldn't go like 10 mile in them, I don't think.
No, I just do sort of like really easy running in that. Yeah. And then I wear the Next Percent for a lot of my training. I mean, to be honest, I can wear the Next Percent for like steady runs, tempo run, all the way down to track. You know, running like 60-second pace, I think that's probably the shoe that's like really helped me actually with my Achilles. Because I think just the protection that it offers is a massive thing. And then obviously the spikes that my go-to spikes are probably the Dragonflies. I think they're great for protecting my Achilles as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I mean that's been a common theme. A lot of people said, you know, Next Percent and Dragonflies, the introduction of these stack heights has helped with Achilles and stuff. But
yeah,
and there'll be people squirming hearing you say you wear your Next Percent for steady runs and all this and that. There'll be people going, what's he doing? But like, I mean, you're the pro athlete, you're the one going to the Olympics. Yeah. So they should probably listen to what you're doing.
Well, I think for me, like, the biggest thing is like, can I, you know, get through the training injury free? So whatever shoe's gonna protect me in the best way, that's what's important to me.
Yeah. I think that's it. And I think that's probably one of the main things that's come out about all these super shoes. It's just allowed people to train more rather than necessarily being ridiculously faster or anything like that. But yeah. Yeah, it's been great to have you on, mate, anyway. And yeah, all the best for the next 3 weeks in your prep, and then obviously for the champs as well.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Yeah,
for a dark horse for future years, I think, Mr. Hayward.
Thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. As always, if you did, could you please leave us a rating and a review on your preferred podcast streaming service? And if you've got any feedback about a pod, please send us a tweet at Sunday Podcast or an email info@sundaypodcast.com.